Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes, Amy.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, casual Friday, November 22nd, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter will be with us. And giving us a movie review will be Jimmy Dore of The Jimmy Dore Show. Also on the program today, boom, folks. Not only did Lucy not pull away the football, Charlie Brown hit like a huge field goal.
Charlie Brown detonated the briefcase.
Yeah. I get distracted by the fact that you will not talk, you will not point the mic towards your mouth. All right, we also on
How's
today's
that
program.
Piece,
yeah. Yeah, it's good. It is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK. If you did not listen to the interview yesterday that we played with Bobby Kennedy, do yourself a favor. We will also link his piece, if we have not already, that is at rollingstone.com. Fascinating. Is, you know, I talked to Bobby about the piece, obviously, off air a little bit. And he says, you know, so much of what has been written about JFK, at least from a column standpoint, there are a couple of books. One, he said, The Unspeakables was a book to read by a guy named Douglas, which I have now put on my iPad to read later. But he said so much has come out in the years, in the past years, not just freedom of information, but in terms of just has been declassified, that there's a lot of misconceptions about President Kennedy and his posture towards the Russians and the Soviets, I should say, and the Cold War. You know, I'm reading a lot of these pieces talking about Kennedy and his disposition as a Cold War hawk, and things that Bobby obviously had a more of a personal investment in sort of chasing down this stuff, but just the stuff about that KGB spy who would hang out with the with Robert Kennedy's family was fascinating. I do not see referenced anywhere else. Certainly check out that interview that we did yesterday and read the piece. I want to remind you just a little bit of housekeeping. Next Wednesday on this program, Janine Garofalo will be in studio. We'll be talking about the news. We'll be talking about what she's been up to. What we will also do is take your phone calls. And in particular, we want you to send us an email. And in the subject line, put in pre-Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving questions. And we will help walk you through the inevitable return to your home and having to deal with that right-wing uncle or that right-wing brother or that right-wing male cousin, the right-wing libertarian. all of whom I think safely we could, I mean, statistically say will be a male and will be white. So, but if not, by all means, I'm just saying from a statistic standpoint. And then that night, I'll be on Chris Hayes doing a little bit of that, a little bit of prep. I mean, this, of course, we started doing this back in the day. And I think we even had not so much geared towards holidays, but how to deal with your right-wing relatives in FUBAR, America's right-wing nightmare. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. All right, folks, it's Casual Friday, and on just about every Casual Friday that we can get him, it is, we are joined by Cliff Schechter, but you know what that means. We are joined first by the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, Cliff Schechter, how are you, my friend?
I am doing all right. How are you doing, buddy?
And the filibuster goes boom. It happened.
I know. You know, it's like we're used to Republicans doing these things, but Democrats, look at us stepping up, showing some cajones, if you will.
You know, this is such an interesting. It was such a small thing, and it was such a small thing in terms of like what happened and procedurally. This, I think, is going to have such radical implications going forward for years and years, some of which will benefit a progressive agenda, some of which will not, and potentially could be very, very problematic from a partisan perspective, but beneficial from a sort of a big D Democratic perspective. It is fascinating what this rules change is going to do. So let's break this down in a couple of ways. Let's start with it first. Just, you know, let's remind folks about the process that brought us to here. Then we will talk about the sort of the practical, short-term practical implications. And then there are sort of long-term practical implications that could be very problematic. And then there are also short and long-term political implications. I mean, this is so huge that it's, you know, I think the beauty of this audience is that only really this audience can really appreciate, I think, in many respects, how huge this is.
It is. And as you said, there's an enormous number of implications. Enormous. This will reverberate in very many ways. The simple reason, you know, why we're doing this, how we got here, is that in completely unprecedented way, the Republicans have used this, their what's supposed to be their advise and consent role in the Senate, which is somebody is a complete goon, you know, we can't pass them, they've got major ethics problems, or they are far off the map of what anybody considers acceptable, you know, on both left and right, we'll block them. But for the most part, a president's nominees to run their, you know, cabinet positions, sub-cabinet positions, you know, various agencies, and their judges, you know, except for in extraordinary circumstances, are supposed to just be accepted, right? In the history of this country, there have been 168 presidential nominees filibustered. 82 of those have been Barack Obama's. 82 of 168. So do a little math there, and you'll come up with about 50% of those in the 200-year history plus year history of this country, and half have been Obama's. That should give you an idea how ridiculous this has been.
Now, let me just say this. What's fascinating, and I would say that, you know, back in June, we were talking about how there was a plan that Harry Reid had in consultation with the president to nominate three justices in rapid succession to the D.C. Circuit Court, which we've mentioned on this program many times, is the second most important court in the country.
And the one that John Roberts sat on, the one that Janice Rogers Brown, who is a lunatic, that Bush's people got put on. We can talk about that in a little bit when they threatened to go nuclear, because it's fun to watch all the hypocritical comments from Republicans who were there then or are there now, who you know, went after the prescription drug requirement in Obamacare. It's a very important, the D.C. Circuit, you know, the appellate court there is a very important court. And
we're going to talk about that more, because this is where all of sort of the executive actions, which could have real policy implications, end up getting overturned or pushed back.
That's correct.
But the plan was to do this in rapid succession, to make it absolutely clear to the Democratic caucus and to all of the sort of all the players involved here that the obstruction by the Republicans was not, as you say, about the problems with any given nominee, but was in fact nullification. So the point is that there's nobody that could have been nominated to fill the three vacancies on this 11-judge court that the Republicans would have confirmed, because they were saying, we don't even believe there should be 11 judges on this court.
Right. I mean, their reasoning was so utterly stupid that there wasn't enough work for the court to do, and, you know, they were underworked. Yet, what the rule of that court is when there's overflow work, which there was, which completely sort of shows that they're a bunch of liars, it goes to retired justices. Oh, and magically, the majority of those retired justices are Republicans, because they're people put there by Reagan and Bush. And so a lot of these decisions that were being made by conservative justices, and that's the way they like it.
You don't even have to go that far, Cliff, because I think you could say, like, look, there's only one way you get to shrink the size of that court, and that is to pass legislation to shrink the size of that court. And so this was another sort of nullification play in the same way that they were holding the government hostage to repeal Obamacare. They couldn't do it.
Well, in the same way, you have to go into a much, and I don't mean to cut you off, Sam, but a much broader pattern than that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're now looking at a decade and a half where they have used impeachment against a sitting president to nullify his reelection, overwhelming reelection in 1996, where they used recall, which is something that now has become a much more regular aspect of our politics,
right,
but used to be something that was only used in extraordinary conditions. You know who broke the seal on that one? A guy you may be familiar with, Daryl Issa, because
right,
he wanted to buy himself the governorship of California and went after Gray Davis at a time when he was low in the polls because of the economy and various other things. In the end, the irony of it was it didn't end up being him, it ended up being Schwarzenegger, because nobody can stand Daryl Issa, even if he has $200 million, to try to buy things for himself. They've used
the Brooks Brothers riot down in Florida, frankly, and all the shenanigans in 2000.
Everything that happened in 2000, the riots, the using the Supreme Court, grabbing what was used to be considered a state affair. This was for Florida to figure out. Didn't matter. The Supreme Court grabbed it. If they hadn't, the state legislature said they were going to overturn what the court did. These guys are ready to overturn democracy in any number of ways to grab power for themselves in an election clearly where the man lost the popular vote and lost the electoral vote if all of the votes were counted. Since that time, you can look at any number of things. The Medicare Part D vote, you know, the traditions of the Senate say you don't hold a vote open for longer than five minutes or so. Well, you know, they held the vote open for 3 or 4 hours while they searched for hiding Republicans to force them to vote their way. They have used massive gerrymandering to the point where Democrats won by 1.4 million votes. Never in the history of this country before has the side that won the most votes in the House race lost to that chamber. The Democrats won by 1.4 million votes, still did not take the House back, barely got closer in doing it. Voter suppression in a way that was used, you know, before the Civil War, after in the Reconstruction years, up until through Jim Crow. They have used everything they can to suppress Democratic votes. Citizens United are having their Supreme Court judges overturn 100 years of campaign finance law to allow the Koch brothers and every other right-wing lunatic with a big paycheck come in and use their money to degrade the results of elections. And it goes on and on and on. They've used every anti-democratic measure one can imagine. They've destroyed precedent. They've thrown it overboard. And this is what they've done to get what they want when they've lost elections. So for anybody to sit here and think, and then of course, let's just use the last one. They, again, not only were they breaking records for filibustering, but when they couldn't get their judges, and quite arguably a couple of those judges, like Janice Rogers Brown, were such extremist lunatics that there was an argument that they should have been prevented from being sent on the court because they don't sit anywhere close to the mainstream of public opinion. But they threatened the nuclear option over their judges in 2005. Mitch McConnell at the time saying judges deserve an up or down vote, but you know he's never been hypocritical before, and so they made sure that they got their people on the court. Basically what they want is they want to overthrow democracy in every way possible. And on the judge side, let me say quickly, 79% of President Clinton's judges were approved. 91% of George W. Bush's judges were approved, a guy that was never elected in the first place in 2000. And with Obama, it's now to an all-time low of 76%. He's only getting three-quarters of the justices. There's 93 vacancies right now. And don't make any mistake, what the Republicans don't want is the fact that judges last a lot longer than presidencies do. And for the first time in I don't know how many years right now, the Democrats have gone just over by one judge over the majority of our judicial system, having Democratic-appointed justices. And if Obama fills those 93, it'll be 55-45% Democrats to Republicans, which is what it should be, considering we'll have had a two-term president. They don't want that. They don't want him to be able to fulfill his constitutional duty to put justices on the court. That is what they are trying to stop. And so with everything I said before, impeachment, extreme gerrymandering, voter suppression, holding open votes for hours, and every other thing these guys have done that go against the grain of our democracy, does anybody here doubt for a second that the Republicans take back the presidency somehow in 2016 and take back the Senate, that they will not just eliminate the filibuster for judicial nominations, but for everything? Of course they will. because they've done a number, so many unprecedented things that no one believed that they would do. And I didn't even bring up, of course, the two shut government shutdowns, as well as the fact that a majority of both their House and Senate caucus were ready to throw us over the cliff on the debt ceiling and needed Democrats to bail them out of their insanity. All right, so this is the people you're dealing with. Anybody who thinks they wouldn't go and eliminate the filibuster the minute they get the chance hasn't been paying attention the
now,
last 15 years.
Now, there's 2 points here I want to just interject. One is we know that Reid has been talking about this for some time. The big question has always been, does he have the 51 votes? People have to remember, we have a much more liberal, and, you know, everything is relative, folks, Senate than we had just 4 years ago. We have no Ben Nelson. We have no Joe Lieberman. We have no Evan Bayh. We have no a little bit less in terms of institutionalists. You know, Carl Levin voted against this because he's very much an institutionalist. You had Manchin.
And Leahy
also
was one of those, and Leahy and Feinstein, who finally were of the institutionalist.
Leahy and Feinstein switched. Even Landrieu, who was nervous, she switched. And then, you know, you used to have Inouye from Hawaii, also one of those institutionalists. So
yep.
This was...
So it's a combination of the institutionalists, and as you said, you know, it's not just... I mean, probably the biggest example you can use is replacing someone like Joe Lieberman with Chris Murphy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, getting replacing Herb Cole with Tammy Baldwin. It's like, even on
and
the Inouye's Democratic side...
And Inouye's a replacement in Hawaii as well.
That's right. That's right. What's her name? I can't think of her name right now.
No, it's Hirono. It's a guy, but I know that actually...
Oh, Brian Schatz. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yes. So I mean, you even on the Democratic side, not even talking about the races that were won, like Elizabeth Warren over Scott Brown, but just talking about on the Democratic side, in a number of places, you know, moderates in Lieberman's case, neoconservatives were replaced with progressives,
right,
and that changed a lot.
And and you should also note that, you know, the implications there are just so huge here. I want to touch on the dangers here for a moment before we go forward and talk about how this is going to affect things politically, because it's not just a question, and people should be clear on this. It's not just a question. Now, all that has now, the filibuster has been removed from all political nominees and all judges, but for justices to the Supreme Court. It's
Which
not for legislation.
Too, but...
What's
but
that?
Whatever.
Well, I mean, it's not.
That's
for
the only one. The legislation one makes sense. There's no point in doing that because we don't have the House and we'll get anything through there anyhow. The Supreme Court one didn't make sense to me. Why make an exception of that?
Well, I think, you know, maybe because it's so a lifetime, but I think it's also there was not. Let's put it this way: there was not the intellectual argument available in the way that there was for all the other judges and nominees.
That's a great point,
because,
right? Because they hadn't blocked somebody.
They hadn't blocked anybody yet. And they hadn't blocked anybody in such an egregious fashion. So a tougher argument to make. But the precedent has been...
But Scalia and Kennedy are no spring chickens, both of them.
That's right.
And if something were to happen and they were to have to step down for a variety of reasons.
But here's the argument I made to my wife about that. I said to her, do you know how many judges on the D.C. Circuit, the D.C. Appeals Court have been filibustered? And she's like, I don't know what that court is. And I said, but if there was two that were filibustered in a row on the Supreme Court or even one, she would know about it. And
no,
so,
you're right. So when that happens, that will get national. You're
exactly
right about that.
And,
that's a very good point.
But now the thing that I think, you know, we also must contemplate here is that, you know, we can talk about had the Republicans been in a position with a Republican president, would they have made this rules change? Undoubtedly. But this the precedent is not just set on the filibuster. The precedent is now set on a host of other things in the future. You know, Jim Manley, who was Reid's former chief of staff, I think it was Jim Manley, was on Hayes last night, and he made the point, which, you know, I haven't seen anybody else bring up, like, could the Republicans, next time they're in control of the Senate, could they say, we're going to change the rules and you need 2/3 majority to raise taxes? Now, there's some question as to whether or not, you know, I mean, you could say, well, budget reconciliation or whatnot, but 2/3 majority, they could do something like that in the future. The whole point here is, and I think, you know, the point is being made in some circles that this the timing of it makes it somewhat partisan. But long term, this is about big D democracy and saying now people are going to have to own things. Even in the future, if they change the filibustering rules for legislation, if they change it, if they change the rules to say you need 2/3 to increase taxes, whatever it is, there's a far more accountability. There's far less like procedural ways in which you can hide what you're doing in some respects. And so this is going to really radically change things, not just from a procedural standpoint, not just from a policy standpoint, but also from a political standpoint. Because from my estimation, the big winner, oddly enough, yesterday was Mitch McConnell. And the big loser, when we talk about Republicans, is Chris Christie. Because now what this is going to do, you know, it is the arguments that this is going to increase polarization in terms of policy, I think, is wrong because you couldn't.
McConnell's able to block less, you know, and someone like Chris Christie, you can come in and bring people together. I think
No. This is my argument is that.
No, you're saying that someone like Chris Christie is not as necessary anymore.
No, on the contrary, what happens is that. While I think we had reached sort of peak partisanship and polarization in terms of actual policy, I don't think that's why this happened, because the Republicans could not obstruct more. And so they had no threat. There was no leverage here. But rhetorically speaking, all these guys are completely untethered, because now, from a rhetorical standpoint, any nominee that is put up in front of the Senate, every single Republican go out there and say, this is Bill Ayers. And the Democrats are going to pass. In fact, they're incentivized to say every nominee is Bill Ayers. And the Democrats are just going to force them in through their dictatorial move. But while that polarization increases, a guy like Chris Christie, who's selling himself to the Republican Party, is like, I'm one of you, but I can also appear as a moderate. It's the bar for what he has to go, where he has to go rhetorically, has now been raised, because you're going to see a rhetorical, you know, the rhetorical response is going to be so large on the Republican side, because now they don't even have the ability to stop these nominees. They don't pay a price for stopping these nominees. They can go all hog wild on the rhetoric, but that puts the supposed moderates in a tough position if they want to work for something nationally.
But may I present a counter view?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yes, of course. That's why you're here.
It's your show, though, Sam.
No, I know. I'm just going to. We'll like cut that. This out in post anyway, so don't worry.
Exactly. Cut this out in editing. Jesus Christ. No, I would say that there's some validity to that. I view things also through the prism of Mitch McConnell's reelection.
Mm-hmm.
And if elections were held where everyone were high information voters and campaigns were honest, then this would help McConnell in a way, because somebody gets on there and you could say there's nothing I can do. But particularly on the Republican side, Tea Party voters, the base of their party is, for lack of a better word, let's see, stupid. And they would believe anything. I mean, you know, I saw the recent thing about Liz Cheney. I'm not going to get too far off of what I'm talking about here, but the questions she was being asked that she had to answer, you know, there was an article about her and the situation with the Cheney family, which is hysterical. And like the first question had something to do with like, you know, how are you going to stop the Bilderbergers? You know, the second question at her town hall meeting. I even calling these town hall meetings as opposed.
Wait,
to like,
what was her answer? I'm going to tell my dad to call it all off.
It's all gay, like my sister, was her answer.
the second question.
There was that, and she didn't know what to say. And the second question was, what are you going to do about President Obama's all Muslim cabinet? So this is what you're dealing with out there. So if you think Matt Bevin, the guy who's running against Mitch McConnell, who's got millions and millions of dollars because he's an independent businessman, can't put ad after ad on saying that McConnell's weak, a wimp, genuflecting, they won't use a word like that, way too many syllables, but basically, giving in to Democrats on everything, letting them appoint their judges, letting them – of course he's going to do that. And he's going to blame McConnell for it. He's going to say, well, maybe Mitch McConnell hadn't – you know, he had kept the government shut down longer and had really fought, he would have stopped this. And, of course, there's no relationship, but it doesn't matter. These people are dumb.
Well,
that's
now,
what
now okay, so what's
gonna
McConnell's
make McConnell
response
look
gonna
weaker?
Be? McConnell's response now is going to be well, Bevins is right about this, that President Obama is appointing all Muslim sympathizers to every court and to every position. But the Democrats have been so vicious, partisan, that they forced this vote and they have, they're oppressing the minorities and the minority in the Senate. And then that makes a guy like Chris Christie's argument that he's just a technocrat and that he's a get things done type of guy. It makes him seem weaker.
No, I agree. It makes Christie seem weaker, but that you're talking, we're talking, I think that's different. That's in the presidential race. I'm talking about in Mitch McConnell's personal race
right.
to get reelected. Bevin can sit there and just say, he's weak, he can't stop it, he won't fight, I will.
Right.
That's what I would do if I knew I were dealing with low information idiots, which they have to know, and that would be my entire ad campaign. You know, so I think in Mitch McConnell's reelection, I think it hurts him. Frankly, it just makes him look weak. Again, he compromises, he gets rolled over. This is the guy you want to reelect because his whole argument in Kentucky is that he's a leader. You know, he's the leader of the caucus. He's the one who can represent them and everything. And they're going to just be like, look, this guy sucks. I don't know. That is what I think is going to. So I think that there are benefits for some Republicans, but I think there's drawbacks too. In the end, if you're looking at it from our side of things, from a progressive side of things, again, with what we went through and the history of what these guys have done recently, if they want to change the Senate rules to 2/3, having to raise taxes, they'll do it anyhow. They don't need this precedent. They didn't need precedent on impeachment. They didn't need precedent on recall of the right. governor of the biggest state, you know, not again for reasons of malfeasance or reasons of being, the fact that he had committed some ethical breach, but just because they didn't like his policies. They don't need, precedent on any of these things. When they decide they just want to do it, they just do it. And our democracy will be in a lot of trouble, yes, if they do that, let's say, with taxes. But I promise you, if they do that with taxes, they'll use this as an argument for why they're doing it, but they would have just used something else.
Right. No, I agree with
that. This is what we're dealing with.
I agree with that. I do think that they will have – I do think that – I'm not convinced it's that black and white, but at the end of the day, I think that's okay. I think that's okay because it is time to put the cards on the table. And, it won't be the argument about what they're doing procedurally. It will be they are starving the country of revenue it needs to protect millionaires. And that's a much better argument in my mind anyways. And so, good.
Yep.
We don't have Democrats arguing about process anymore. Let's just do this. And let's just take – I want to take a couple minutes – and then I want to talk about JFK just briefly, but
Can I just say one very quick thing, which is my only fear with this thing, is that Obama will still try to be Mr. Nice, Mr. Moderate, Mr.
Yes.
Friendly. If I had more faith in him, I would know 120% this is the right thing to do because he should stand up right now and nominate people for all 93 of those open judicial posts.
Absolutely.
And get votes on one after another. And if he does that, this was absolutely the right thing to do. If he just does the three on the circuit court, the appellate court, and then wimps out on others and says, well, let's find agreement, then that's only time will tell if Obama can stop being a wimp.
But that's also another benefit for progressives, I think, because it puts the onus on Obama now. It says, okay, you were complaining about Republican obstruction. Now you don't have it when it comes to your nominees. You've got to put people on in these courts and in these executive branches. You have no excuse now. We will genuinely see your agenda. I mean, let's put it this way. I'm not arguing that we hadn't seen the agenda before, but now there's no excuse. And people should know that just the implications of these three judges going on this court. And these judges are centrist at best. I mean, we are not talking about, the Goodwin Lewes here. These are judges who have served, one of whom, the last one, I think, Millett, was getting, accolades from, from you know, Republican, old line Republicans, you know, sort of
right.
George Herbert Walker, Barack
right.
Obama.
I'm not saying all these judges will be great, but they still won't be Alito and Scalia.
That's right.
You know, and there's a huge difference between a moderate, look, I want them all to be progressives, of course, but there's a huge difference between a moderate judge that pays attention to precedent and believes in progress and the four and a half, let's call them, reactionaries sitting on that Supreme Court right now, which I go with 4 3/4. Once in a while on an issue like, you know, sodomy, God help us all, you know, Kennedy has common sense, but on many numerous other issues, and he's even now seeming to back off of his ruling, and you know, his Roe versus Wade ruling.
Right.
In other decisions he's making, you know, he's just said that the Texas, what Texas is doing is not considered to be an undue burden on women, even though you may have to travel a freaking year to get to an abortion clinic. And so, obviously, this is, you know, and he's getting towards 80 years old. So is Scalia.
Yep.
So these you know, filling these you know, making sure that when we have, oh, you know, this is one of the big projects of the Federalist Society and of Reagan, was to remake the judiciary. They did. It's now heading back in the right direction. And we need it to go further. Okay, let's get to Kennedy.
I want to get to Kennedy, but I also just want to remind people that there are three major sort of policy arenas that are going to be impacted by these justices who are going to be supposedly brought back up for nomination in December that they will deal with. They will deal with, and we have talked about this, we had a great interview with Haley Sweetland Edwards some time ago about what is chipping away at Dodd-Frank. One of the major things was that you had corporate lawyers going in, and these regulators, they'd get tied up by these corporate lawyers who said, we're going to sue you in this D.C. circuit, and you're going to lose. And they knew they were going to lose, the regulators, and so they had to write these regulations with fear of being overturned by this court. That's going to change. With all the stuff the EPA that the president announced that the EPA wants to go forward with in terms of climate and in terms of sort of more, I mean, in particular in terms of climate change, these now are not going to face the roadblock at this court. Also, labor market regulation. This is the court that said that those recess appointments of the National Labor Relations Board were invalid. And there's and this is a court that could have potentially, if there's ever an opportunity to get card check, would strike that down. This is going to have major implications for policy, and it's going to
be this is Obama's legacy at this point.
Yep.
Because nothing's getting through the House, and after the huge Obamacare, you know, disaster of that rollout, they took a 9-point, you know, generic ballot lead and they threw it in the garbage, and we're now back to equal. You know, meaning that the whole shutdown effect is gone. Now, the Republicans still have plenty of time to do unbelievably dumb things, and they tend to. And we've got more shutdown drama potentially coming up. We've got more debt ceiling drama. And so they can find themselves. But even in the case, you know, and a couple guys in swing seats have already, you know, announced they're retiring. But even so, it's looking like it's going to be a huge haul to try to pick up the House. So in the end, it's the writing of the rules by his agencies, and it's those rules being endorsed and accepted by the courts are really where he's going to be able to make any difference at this point.
Yep.
And that's what he needed this for.
And I think you're going to see, you know, obviously the stakes of the Senate campaigns across the country were huge to begin with, but this makes them even this makes them even more, you know, the stakes here are going to be just massive. And it's going to be.
Although, good thing to remind people of, also, they will be massive in 2014. And yet, at the same time, with a Democrat at the top of the ticket in 2016, the whole class of 2010 is going to have to get reelected. All the people that are way too far right wing for places where they won, Republicans, mind you.
Yep.
Kelly Ayotte, Ron Johnson, Pat Toomey, Marco Rubio. I mean, these are people that in swing states and Democratic states are going to have to find ways to get reelected. And for the first time in a few cycles, there'll be a lot more of them on the ballot. And with a Democratic presidential candidate likely winning in places like New Hampshire and Wisconsin. So there is that to keep in mind.
Yep. All right. So let's just take a couple of minutes. Obviously, you know, we played an interview with Bobby Kennedy yesterday. And I know as a big history guy, Is that a word? I don't know. Yourself,
you can make it up and say it.
I know that you're a JFK a buff when it comes to sort of his assassination and whatnot. Three or four weeks ago, I think it was, John Kerry said that he did not think that Oswald was acting alone. And then when he was pressed on it by David Gregory, he said, "That's all I'm going to say." Which I thought was fascinating. There's obviously a huge slew of books that have come out in time with the 50th anniversary talking about the assassination. But I think that the and I know you've read Bobby Kennedy's piece. I mean, I think the real sort of interesting thing to me about Bobby Kennedy's piece was just how much tension there was between John F. Kennedy and the national security apparatus. People forget that Bay of Pigs happened only months into his office. It had already been in the works for over a year and a half, almost over a year and a half.
He inherited it from the guys, the Dulleses, the guys under Eisenhower.
Yep.
And he fired people over it. I mean, it was something he inherited. Look, you know, it's always tough to look back and know exactly what would have happened. What one does know is he was certainly making speeches where he was talking about how we all were all mortal. We all breathe the same air, you know, that ultimately we had to deal with people. He was reaching out in numerous ways with nuclear treaties, and hadn't committed in the same way to Vietnam. You know, and obviously people will point to other things. It's hard to know, but what you can know is that we see these guys today. We see certain members of that sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, I know it's almost become a cliche, the military-industrial complex. There was a lot of hatred for him. There are people that felt that we should have nuked Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis on the far right, you know, the Ted Cruz's of the day.
There was people who wanted to nuke in the chain of command, who wanted to preemptively nuke the Soviets.
Bombs away LeMay and, you know, General Edwin Walker and some of these nuts, the General Boykins of their day.
Yep.
And so, you know, he stood up to that, you know, and again, I can't, you know, I've read dozens of books on this. It is something where I became a bit of a buff for a while on this. And all I can say is, you know, there's just a few areas that don't add up. I don't believe for a second that Oswald was acting alone. I don't believe I have all the answers. I never will. But everything from the Zapruder film to what went on at the Parkland, you know, when they were the hospital, when they were doing when they were looking at JFK's body, and it's pretty clear that it seemed to me that, you know, where they were trying to say that the head acted in a way that it would never act when shot, as in heading towards a bullet as opposed to away from it. What they were trying to call an entry wound looks pretty much like an exit wound in the back. The numerous people that saw smoke, you know, coming from the grassy knoll. The fact that Oswald would have had to get off all of these shots in about 7 seconds, and he was considered to be an average at best, below average really, rifleman when he was in the Marines. Too many things don't, and of course the magic bullet theory given to us by Arlen Specter is something to behold. There's too much there.
I have never really sort of dug into that aspect of it. The part that has always given me pause has been Jack Ruby. And it's interesting because I've thought about it more because I've been talking to Milo about it, because obviously she hears about it and I've been explaining it to her. And she said, John F. Kennedy was killed by Harvey Oswald. And she said, why did he kill him? And, you know, it's easy to answer for an 8-year-old. I'm not going to go in. Well, it could have been the Cubans. It could have been the mafia. It could have been, Lyndon Johnson. I mean, you know, you could go on and on. They just say he didn't like him. And then I said, well, is he in jail? And I said, no, he was shot by Jack Ruby. Why did Jack Ruby shoot him? And then I don't have an answer. You know, like Jack Ruby supposedly shot him because he was protecting the name of Dallas. But Jack Ruby was from Chicago. Why did he care about what happened in Dallas? And
right, I mean,
Jack Ruby was you know, this mafia guy.
He was a nightclub owner. He had mob connections. The mob had, you know, had been some people that Kennedy had worked with in some of the Castro and other plots and had turned against them because of Robert Kennedy going after the mob. The mob was hugely connected to the intelligence apparatus in terms of, the you know, contracts and things done. I mean, you know, there's this stuff where you could go deeper into it where there's less proof. And then there's the very base stuff like this, which I try to stick to. You know, I mean, should we believe that, for example, Woody Harrelson's dad, Charles Harrelson, killed a federal judge who people believe, you know, was one of the winos who was arrested that day and disappeared? There are these three winos arrested, right? There are pictures of them and everything. Somehow they disappeared. He claims now, you know, he's claimed, or I don't know if he's still with us, but he did, you know, when he was in jail, that he eventually killed a federal judge. He claimed he was one of them who was there. All right. I mean, stuff like that. Not so much harder to prove, and you're getting much deeper into conspiracy theory. But stuff like what you just said, why would Jack Ruby do it? How the hell does he get into a police station when they're marching out the supposed assassin of the president and get to a position where he can get in place to shoot the guy? Things like that just don't make any sense. Things like, you know, again, Lee Harvey Oswald's ability to shoot and what he would have had to pull off in a very small period of time. Hitting with two of those shots, all right, very hard to believe. The sound experts who said that there were more than shots than he could have fired, the fourth shot, you know, and others that ricocheted. There's just too much there.
We should also remind people that
the committee in the mid-70s came to the conclusion, the congressional committee, that there likely was a conspiracy.
Yes.
And so I don't know how deep it goes or any of that stuff. I can't believe with the available evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
You know, the best argument that I have heard for the Warren Commission cover-up, which seems almost now to be, in some ways, at least to some degree, almost like creeping into conventional wisdom, is that they were concerned that because there was a foreign, you know, sort of involvement in some way, maybe Cubans or whatnot, that it would cause World War III. I mean, it doesn't have to be some type of conspiracy in this situation. The answer does not have to be as nefarious as it could be. It could be less.
That's exactly right.
Nefarious.
You know what the answer? Let me say quickly. I know we've got to go, but you know the answer seems to be very simply. I mean, people need to learn lessons. They need to look at what the CIA was doing in Guatemala, Iran, places like that. The kinds of coups that were happening. And I'm not saying the CIA was necessarily involved, although there could have been rogue members. You don't know, but you need to look at what was going on with the intelligence apparatus back then. What was going on with you know, organized crime, and just sort of at some point try to use some common sense. And that brings me back to what you're saying right now, which is we can't ever know for sure, but just take a look, you know, at what the establishment does today in Washington, D.C. The establishment does not trust the people of this country with all sorts of things. We know that, right? They think that people are just not able to understand things and are not trustworthy. We talk about it all the time, whether it's, you know, why we need to cut Social Security, you know? I mean, it's just the establishment knows better. Whatever polling tells you most people think, they're convinced they know better. So why wouldn't a group that includes the ultimate establishment people, including Gerald Ford, you know, and others, come to that same conclusion.
Oh,
you know what? Whoever it was that did this, people can't be trusted to know this because there could be riots, there could be, you know, call for a world war, there could be, and we need to shut that down. Why would people not believe that that would be the conclusion they would come to?
Right.
Earl Warren and Gerald Ford and others, like, I mean, of course that would be the conclusion they would come to. Wouldn't matter if they were liberal, conservative, whatever they are. The establishment's the establishment. We know that.
Cliff, well said, as always. We will not be doing a show next Friday, as we will be off for Thanksgiving.
Watching our waistlines increase.
I don't know that I could do that at this point. I can't see mine.
Well, that's because you gave birth to another child, right?
Yes, and I'm eating.
Not your fault.
Yes, it's just it's.
You're still trying to take off the baby weight.
Yeah, indeed, I'm gaining it. All right, well, Cliff, have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you after the holiday.
You too, buddy. Thanks for having me on, as always.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the great Jimmy Dore. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program for the first time. I don't know why this is the case. I mean, we've actually worked together on a couple of TYT shows or co-hosted, or I can't exactly remember exactly what we were doing, but Jimmy Dore of the Jimmy Dore Show, which we will have a link to at majority.fm.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on. I should also say jimmydorecomedy.com. And you're going to be at the Improv in L.A. on the 30th, is that right?
That is correct. That's a Saturday night, 10 p.m. show. Come check out the big show at the Improv. And, you know, I was just I noticed that you had Diane Rabbit. Did you have her on today or yesterday?
She was on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So that was, okay. So I went and saw her talk. You know, this is the thing. I have a brother who's one of those guys who's angry at teachers.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, yeah, that's what's wrong with our country. The teachers taking all our money with their gold-plated health care plans. You ever hear that?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know when teachers get a heart attack, they go down to Cartier to get a stent. That's what happens. Anyway, I saw Diane Rabbit speak a couple weeks ago, and I just thought she was fantastic. So great kid getting her on your show.
She is so great, and I've had a lot of educators on to talk about, you know, the so-called education reform movement and what needs to be done. And she is by far the best, single best, I mean, heads and tails above advocates of genuine, effective education policies and in fighting back against the corporate privatization reform movement. And I couldn't, I mean, we tried to book her for ages, and I felt so lucky to have her on. And I want to talk to you, but I want to talk to you about the filibuster a little bit. But before we go there, I didn't realize that you were one of the writers of the marijuana logs. Like I knew, you know, Benson and Barker and Tony Kameen, but I didn't realize you were one of the writers of that.
Yes. You know, of course, I wrote a very little about, but some of my, what they call logs, made it into the show. So when I would perform with them, they would allow me to put some of my stuff in, and which was really nice of them. And then when they went to Broadway with the show, they decided to include some of the stuff that I would include when I would perform. So that's how I got to be a writer for the show. It was great. And I got to perform it off Broadway with them, and we toured with them too in Australia and a few other places. That was a blast. That was one of the funnest things ever.
Yeah, that must have been fun. I mean, I remember when they were doing that in New York. I think we used to have them on at that time, and I don't know that I ever saw the show, or I did. I don't know. Everything interesting seems to happen when I have a baby.
Oh, okay. Wow, you have a real family. Well, that's something. Yeah. I'm married to comedy, and that's not good.
I don't know. Comedy doesn't wake you up at 6 in the morning because your comedy's baby is screaming at the top of his lungs because he's got a tooth now. So
okay. No, it was a great show. You should have saw it. You should have made time. Baby or no baby.
I know. I'm just not allowed to leave the house, frankly. But give me your perspective on the filibuster stuff, because I think it's pretty huge. And there's not a lot of genuine comedians, which I think you are one, who is also genuinely sort of in touch with what's going on politically, not just that their politics are good, but you follow politics in a way that I think, you know, people who are sort of working comedians don't necessarily follow.
Well, I'll just say this about the filibuster thing. It's so now what we're going to be stuck with because of this, because they reform, we're going to be stuck with majority rule. Well, what kind of a democracy are we living in, Sam? I mean, where the people's will is reflected by the actions of their elected leaders? I mean, what is this, Russia? I don't get this.
It's insane.
So all of a sudden, so politicians run on platforms. People elect them to implement those platforms. Then they're supposed to go to Washington and do that stuff? I mean, I don't know what. You know, what's next, Sam? Government's going to be responding to people and solving problems. Before you know, government's going to start helping people. And then where will we be?
You know, Jimmy, you'll be singing a different tune when they get a guy like Sam Alito on the Supreme Court.
That was hilarious. Yeah, you know what? You better watch out. We're going to have another Anton Scalia, who passed 91 to nothing.
That's right.
When he was nominated, passed 91 to nothing. What are you talking about? Hey, you know that thing you guys agreed to again? You're going to agree to it again.
That's right.
It was really weird. You know, it's weird to see the Democrats stand up. I didn't think they had this in them. But here's the thing. I predict they will cave and not fill those other 97 federal judge vacancies. What do you think about that?
You know, listen, I think the beauty of this is that there is a lot less procedural things to hide, to sort of like hide behind. And now there's, you know, and I've followed these arguments in sort of the wonkier circles about how President Obama has did a very bad job early on in nominating judges to fill these slots. And the counter arguments were always like, what difference would it make? The obstruction has been there since day one. True, it's very hard to provide a counterfactual, but that obstructionism, the vehicle for that is now gone. And so I don't know if we'll see more nominations, but I do know there's going to be a lot less excuses. In fact, no excuse not for them to be filled. So it's going to put the onus back on. It provides accountability for both for members of both parties, and that's important, I think.
I think it's the greatest thing ever. I've always been against the filibuster. I mean, in all seriousness, I think now there'll be some things maybe that get done. You know, since Obama won't be able to pass anything because of the House. Now maybe he'll be able to get some things done this way, you know, by just kind of implementing his executive agenda through his appointments. How do you think the mainstream media did in reporting the obstructionism by the Republicans? Again, they fall over themselves with the false. Well, of course, you know, the Democrats do have the filibuster when they're in power. It couldn't be anything remotely what's happening to Barack Obama. And I'm no big Barack Obama fan either. But, Tip O'Neill did allow Ronald Reagan to get his agenda in. You know, he did respect the will of the people, even if he disagreed with it. So I think at some point you have to respect democracy. You have to respect the ballot box. But, of course, we know they don't respect any of that stuff. They're just about power. And right now they see their power. It's so funny, Sam, that they're a party with no ideas, because the Democrats have co-opted the Republican ideas. Obamacare is the biggest example of that. So now they have nothing left to offer, and what you're left with is a party with no ideas. You can't win the battle of ideas with no ideas. So now what they're doing is suppressing the vote all over the place and trying to get people, trying to narrow who can vote.
That's basically what I'm saying on a daily basis. But to the point about the press covering the obstruction, I think they didn't. I give them a C. You know, there's a lot of sort of false equivalency, but it's also I just don't think that people, you know, they're just not animated. I mean, you know, audience is just, this audience, I think my audience is fairly unique, because I will fire people who listen to this program who are not interested in the most wonky and narrow conversations possible. But I will literally go in and cut off their feed if they don't have the appreciation for it. But I mean, it's just, you know, the obstruction argument only goes so far. People just don't want to hear excuses, whether they are valid or not. It just puts people to sleep. And now there's no excuses. So good.
And you know what? They didn't rewrite the Constitution. They didn't amend it. They didn't even pass a law. All they did was change the rules of the Senate. It's not a big deal. Happens all the time, and it should happen. It's just the rules of the Senate. That's not a big deal.
I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think it's a big deal. Well, they did was tiny, but what the implications are going to be huge, I think.
Yes, correct. Yeah, that's what I meant. But, you know, here's another thing that kind of goes hand in hand with this filibuster is, you know, John Boehner's not passing anything in the House at all. You know, that's of any consequence. And, as Luke Russert points out, the world's most successful intern, he said that John Boehner, I know that John Boehner wants to have a legacy because Luke Russert, who has a personal relationship with him, I know because he said so, that John Boehner wants to leave a legacy. So, you know, so why does Boehner want to remain Speaker of the House in a job where he's not allowed to do, he can't do anything because his hands are tied by his base? So he's basically wanting to hold on to a job where he's guaranteed to be ineffectual and unsuccessful. Why would he want that?
You get free drinks. I think it's free whiskey at the the House Commissary, I think, if you're the Speaker. You get to cut in line. You get to cut in line.
I think you're right. Hey, maybe that's it. I don't know. Hey, can I just? I just want to get to this really quickly before
please.
We. You know, you were talking about the Supreme Court and Kennedy. I heard you earlier talking about him with the, you know, the Kennedy on the Supreme Court is
right.
3/4 of a great yeah, and it was funny because he did come down on the right side of the sodomy law, right, which was. in Texas, they had the sodomy law where you couldn't. And by the way, that's when I found out. Did you know that sodomy not only means oral sex, but it also anal sex it also means oral sex? Did
oh,
you
yes.
know that?
Oh yeah, of course I knew that. Are you kidding? That's
well,
it used to be part of my pickup lines back in the day.
Well, I did not know that it's like that word because those things aren't even close together. Like you know, it's like why can't they have a word that means different? It shouldn't mean both things, is what I'm pointing out. Why should it mean something fun that we all enjoy and then something that's just downright fantastic? It doesn't seem right, Sam.
Well, that was what did in Ken Cuccinelli, right? Because he was the one who sort of introduced Virginians to the scope of the sodomy laws. I think he was perfectly – and I think in some states, there's you know the anti-sodomy laws are still on the books you can get busted for – orally copulating, I believe, is the radio safe term, and anally copulating. So,
yeah, wow. When you say it, I feel something move. I feel something move.
I don't know. This has been burning on your mind for a while, huh, Jimmy?
I really wanted to shoehorn in that sodomy joke. Hey, President Kennedy, by the way, I don't know if you're covering it today, but if people that, you know, some of his famous quotes people don't know, he famously said, I need another parade like I need a hole in my head. I don't know if you know he said
oh,
that.
Oh, God.
What's the matter?
Did you really
he
just
really
do
did.
That?
I figured everybody's talking so serious about it, I had to be a jackass about it for at least a second. Not a lot of people know he said that. That's
what,
true.
What other quotes you got?
I got some from Alec Baldwin, but I don't think we can say them on the air.
No.
Hey, by the way, did you know that calling someone what he called him was, I know the F word was not good, but the C word, I thought that was just like a general, first of all, why have we made that a bad word? Why are we shaming that behavior? Have you talked about that on your show?
No, you know I haven't. I never got to the why are we shaming people for? No, well, I mean, I think that was actually one of the complaints is that he didn't just call this guy a fag, I guess it was or whatever, but he specifically said
with a C sucker. Can you say that?
You can say penis sucker, I guess.
Okay. So he called us. Which I didn't know that was a homophobe. I didn't know that was a gay slur. I just thought that was like a slur against anybody.
It's like a slut shaming.
I didn't know.
Isn't it? I mean, it's more slut shaming.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. First of all, I just like, the reason I bring it up, Sam, is because A, Alex said it, but B, I want to get people to stop shaming that behavior, that we should encourage that behavior. That's one of the nicest things you can do for someone. That's nicer than helping a guy move. You know what I mean? That is a nice thing.
This is all part of your, like, sort of your whole anti-sodomy platform that you're running on now. Right?
Yes, Sam. Somebody's got to talk about the serious issues on your show, Sam, and that's what I'm here for.
People should know. People should know that Jimmy has a PhD in health policy with a concentration in sexual education. So, I mean, this is not, you're not just shooting, yes, off, shooting from the hip, as it were.
That's right. Yeah. I was a pioneer of the you can't get pregnant from a rape theory. That's my, and I worked for, and that is true. Sam, when I was, that's true. You can't get pregnant from rape. When I was a kid, I used to watch The Price is Right. And Bob Barker used to end every show, make sure your pets don't get impregnated, have them spayed, neutered, or raped. Don't you remember he would say that?
Oh, I don't.
Maybe I'm older than you. Maybe. Am I older than you? Maybe that's it.
I know what I'm doing this weekend. I'm answering emails from some...
What? What? I'm serious about... You know, when I was in college, my wife and I, we didn't have two nickels to rub together, just like the Romneys. And one night, she said, we were going to have sex, and she said, Jimmy, I don't have any condoms. And I was like, honey, I don't have any money to buy condoms. And she was like, oh, I guess you're going to have to rape me. So that's the way it went for me, Toad.
No.
What I'm saying is...
Hold on for 1 second.
Sam, when do we go on the air?
Oh, my
so,
God.
So many.
We're
going to
get so many emails this weekend.
Sam, when does this go up? Are we on the air?
No, not anymore.
Okay.
We ended the interview about two minutes ago. The whole show shut
right,
down,
sure.
Actually. They pulled our power.
Sam, this is the type of political analysis you'll get every week on the Jimmy Dore Show.
I got to say, folks... this segment is generally I seek a movie recommendation for a streaming movie because I can't leave my house because my aforementioned kids I think we all know what your movie recommendation is going to be. What genre, anyways?
No, it's.
Do you have any anti-sodomy videos that you're now promoting?
Well, it's a foreign film. It's a foreign film. It's called Das Butt. It's a little different. anyway, listen, I actually did have a real movie there. So, I don't watch movies, but I feature.
Wait, what do you watch generally? I mean,
well, I watch old
I know,
movies.
Never mind. That's a loaded question, wasn't it?
Yes, that is. No, actually, I don't make time for movies like I should, but I did. I accidentally saw this movie called Killing Me Softly. It was on the TV the other day when I turned it on, and it's with the James Gandolfini and with Brad Pitt, and it's directed by Andrew Dominik. And I got to tell you, it was one of the – I like those kind of movies. Like, I like Michael Mann movies and Thief with James Caan. So it was kind of like that, but James Gandolfini was really throwing down some acting in that. It was really amazing, actually. So I would that's my recommendation, Killing Them. Have you seen that movie?
I think I have seen it, but I would actually watch it again. But that was a good movie. That was a good movie. I saw that recently, actually, and that was a good movie, I thought.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. We're back. The show's back on track. We're talking about movies.
Right.
I mean, I'm here with Sam Cedar, Majority Report. You can subscribe, become a member.
Now, you've been doing your show for almost now 4 years, right? 5 years.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I did. What happened, Sam, was my goal in life was to get an hour special, stand-up comedy special. And then I got it, and then I didn't have a plan. I didn't know what to do afterwards. With myself. I really didn't plan past that. And then, so I tried to kill myself a few times. And then after that, I started doing my own radio show out here at KPFK in Los Angeles, which is actually out in New York too on WBAI, but I don't know when they run it.
Yeah. I mean, they're in transition over there now, I think, in the city.
They ran it at 10 in the morning once, and then they ran it at 2 in the morning.
Now, so do you do, so do you do, is your KPFK show, is it distinct from the Jimmy Dore show? Or, I mean, do you do more podcasting beyond that?
No. So the Jimmy Dore show is the show we're talking about. That's on KPFK and then Pacifica, and that's also a podcast. And then I also do the Jimmy Dore show on the Young Turks Network.
Oh, right. Okay.
So we do it in front of cameras, but it's not the same show. We actually do different. It's not just the same show, but with cameras. we have different material and different things and different guests. And
where are you guys shooting now? I know. Young Turks are looking for a new studio. Where are you guys shooting out of now?
So they just got their new studio. They did an Indiegogo campaign, which they're almost they set a goal of $250,000, Sam, to build their new studio, and they're at like $225,000 right now with like 10 days to go. They're gonna make it.
Wow.
That's amazing. So it's in Culver City. And which is a great drive. I live in Pasadena. I go to Culver City. I get there in like two and a half hours. It's nothing. It's great. So no, actually, I've been trying to move. I've been looking for a new house, but that's another story.
So they already have the studio is already in place, or what is it? What are you doing in the interim?
Yes. No, they were doing shows out of the YouTube space. Now they've got. So the YouTube has their big. And that was very nice of you, too, but that caused a lot of problems. So now they have their own studio, and it's working out great. They just started there last week.
Well, folks, if you're in L.A., Jimmy's going to be at the Improv on November 30th. Also, of course, you can go to JimmyDoreComedy.com to get more info. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, thanks for having me on, Sam. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, folks. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer cake? I didn't see one.
I didn't see one.
I did not see one either. So we'll take a. Well, I guess we're almost there. So Freebie Friday, unbelievable. I just give and give and give. $250,000 for the studio. That's pretty good. Now, I think you can look at our video product and get a sense of what percentage we put into this studio of $250,000. I would say it's significantly less. We put $1.2 million though into our audio facility. So, we didn't have any money left for the video. But let's go. We got a couple of. Oh, I got to play you this. So we've had Mike Stark on this program before, and you'll recall that he had a website in past years called Calling All Wingnuts. And Mike got his start up upstate New York calling some right-wing radio hosts. He has plagued Rush Limbaugh and guys like Sean Hannity. And they have explicit instructions to keep Mike Stark off the air on Limbaugh's show. But sometimes Mike, who is also now an attorney, still, he's so good at this. Here is Mike Stark calling into Rush Limbaugh's program to remind everybody of Rush Limbaugh's, interesting past when it comes to illicit drugs. I think maybe he was inspired by the recent arrest of a Republican congressman. Listen to how Stark first butters up Limbaugh and how just like you can hear Limbaugh just sort of like just like he's just so triumphant. He's like a peacock. And then Mike Stark brings up Viagra, not coincidentally. Here it is.
Joel in Falls Church, Virginia. We want to grab a call. You're first. Great to have you. Hello, sir.
Well, I think you're a little self-deprecating. There's no doubt you can get a Medal of Freedom. First of all, back in the 90s, weren't you invited to honorary chair or gavel or something like that of the House of Representatives?
That's right. I was named an honorary member of the freshman class of 1994.
And then just recently, you had a statue of you yourself dedicated at the Missouri House of Legislature, whatever it is there. And
that was that's a bust of me. In the Hall of Famous Missourians at the State House in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Pause it.
Which, by the way,
that was a bust of me in the Hall of Famous Missourians. Oh, he's so eating this up. This is so brilliant. And now the hammer.
The left is still trying to get removed.
Well, what I'm thinking is that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, came after you exchanged 2 boxes of cash for narcotics in Florida, something that most people go to jail for, you know, decades for mandatory minimums. They gave you a statue. I mean, you imported drugs into America with the Viagra deal down in Florida.
Oh, no, sir. You are a victim of, once again, totally distorted media reporting. The first half of your call is exactly right. But the last half of your call is just filled with the usual leftist bigotry, hatred, and gibberish, and you have the slightest idea what you're talking about. And that's the best they can do. That is the absolute best they can do. And now,
that's it. That's the best they can do, is to drudge up old police records. Yes.
I love those moments when it's like, that's the best you can do.
That's the best you can do, which is to state exactly the truth. Kudos to Mike Stark. He's just brilliant. And just to see how easy it was to get Limoges just trumpet around, you're absolutely right, the bust of me. And the
psychological mastery of that call was
brilliant.
Pretty brilliant. Amazing.
Kudos to Mike Stark. And
the best part, really quick, you're right about the first half of that call. I love how he tries to salvage it.
Right.
That was amazing.
You're not completely discredited. There is a bust of me. I am one of the most famous Missourians to come out of that state. And women are, of course, semen receptacles. Here is a story of a huge, huge a-hole. Democratic State Representative Tom Brower from Hawaii. He is going around to deal with the homeless problem by taking a sledgehammer and smashing up shopping carts that are used by homeless people to carry around their meager belongings. And what's more disgusting than what he's doing is the news coverage of it that make it like, is this a one guy's taking it in his own hands? Let's cut to that now, Matt.
This is Hawaii News Now.
Does it help or hurt? Good evening. I'm Chris Tanaka.
And I'm Mileka Lincoln. A lawmaker is tackling the homeless problem and taking it into his own hands by wielding a sledgehammer to disable abandoned shopping carts. Jim Mendoza is live at Ala Moana Beach Park with the story. Jim?
Mileka, you know, these are just some of the shopping carts that Representative Tom Brower found here abandoned at Ala Moana Beach Park in the 2 weeks that he's been doing his one-man crusade.
The man with the sledgehammer is State Representative Tom Brower. This is his contribution to solving Hawaii's homeless problem.
And I got tired of telling people, you know, I'm trying to pass laws. I want to do something.
Now, at this point, I know you're waiting for the other shoe to drop when they say, but actually what he's doing is completely pathological. This is one man's crusade to go around, and I'm putting rat poison in food in the, I mean, it's just unbelievable. But the other shoe just does not drop. It continues.
Practical that will really clean up the streets.
He scours streets and parks in his district looking for shopping carts homeless use to store and move their items. Some he returns to stores, others he disables.
I find abandoned junk, specifically shopping carts, and I remove them. I also create a situation where those carts can't be pushed around the city.
Now, pause.
I think it's a good.
On one hand, he says this is abandoned junk. In other words, the definition of abandoned junk is junk that nobody uses. But then he doesn't just find it. He disables it. So he knows it's being used for some purpose by some human beings who he believe, obviously, are subhuman, and they don't, they should not be able to use these things. He's obviously not worried about returning the property because he's only done that with 1/4 of what he's found. The rest he destroys.
City, I think it's a good thing.
But the executive director of Mental Health America of Hawaii thinks that Brower's actions are way over the line.
His message to the public is that it's okay to commit acts of violence against homeless people, against vulnerable people. It's okay for vigilante justice.
Some are calling his method extreme and potentially dangerous.
There are some people who are maybe, you know, I'd say a little bit not that stable and maybe drug affected that, you know, could really react to him.
But the chairman of the Waikiki Neighborhood Board says merchants may sit up and take notice.
It might get these owners to say, hey, this has got to stop, and I'm going to start filing police complaints.
You know, we got to get them to not take the cars.
Brower tried to explain what he was doing to this man.
To see someone just going, just banging on stuff like that, it was very scary for me.
I don't want to be threatening to anybody, but I think it's threatening to steal things and then walk around with them like it's their own.
Brower says he had...
Now, so he's not threatening anybody as he goes around with a sledgehammer and smashes these things. But the idea of someone walking around with a shopping cart, that's a huge threat to me. This guy's pathological. And this reporter is like, here we're going to go to some bleeding heart liberal who works with the homeless. And of course, she's going to say this is wrong. But then we're going to go to someone else who's going to say these people are psychologically deranged and they could go off at any moment. This is just unbelievable.
Because only someone who's psychologically deranged would get a bit angry at someone destroying their stuff.
Well, only someone who works with the homeless would actually care about these people as human beings. And only someone who's deranged would have a problem with some guy who's not deranged for walking around the neighborhood with a sledgehammer smashing shopping carts. He's not deranged. He's not the deranged one. This is just unbelievable.
Has yet to take a cart from a homeless person who's pushing it, but that may be coming. He supports other efforts to remove abandoned property. This is his way of pitching in.
Pause it. This is his way of pitching in and lending a hand to oppress these people who have virtually nothing.
And we are back here live now. If you wondered what he does with that sledgehammer, he knocks in the tires like on this shopping cart right here so they can't be pushed around the city streets again. So far, he has destroyed about 30 shopping carts and he piles them up for the city to take away. He has returned about 6 of them to merchants. Reporting live at Ala Moana Beach Park, I'm Jim Mendoza, Hawaii News Now.
Pause it. And if you're wondering how you can get into the act, all you need to do is go down to the hardware store and smash a couple of these things and then leave it around for the city to pick up. Back to you at the studio.
All right, thank you, Jim. Now it's time for you to weigh in on Representative Brower's approach towards the homeless issue. Is he right or reckless? Post your comments now on our Hawaii News Now Facebook page.
Giant pill.
There you go. Well, as long as we're going to get some questions on our Facebook page about this, is he right to destroy other people's property? I mean, even if it isn't his. I mean, even if it isn't the homeless person's that he says it is. I mean, how can it be both be abandoned and being used by a homeless person? If it's abandoned, then those homeless people have every right to take it. If it's not abandoned, then what right does he have to destroy the supermarket's property? It's unbelievable. Apparently, there was an update after this came out, and I imagine some people on the Facebook page said, hey, Representative Brower, you're a psychopath. He agreed to stop destroying homeless people's possessions. I'm not trying to attack the homeless. I'm trying to attack the issue of cleanliness. But some people interpret it as an attack on the homeless. I'm trying to attack the issue of cleanliness. The point was that I was trying to make has been made. Now that the issue of shopping carts is on our minds, the question is, are we going to move forward and try to solve it or just let it become the status quo? This guy is a psychopath. Unbelievable. We just can't have the beautiful visage of Hawaii, the Aloha State. marred by these very dirty people with shopping carts. And so the best thing to do is to smash the shopping carts and pay them to leave. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'm not making a direct comparison, obviously, but I told you guys about how Manuel Castells reported years ago that the Cali drug cartel in Cali, Colombia, they used to do these campaigns with local police where they would kill homeless people and people on the street. And then they would hang signs that said, clean Cali, beautiful Cali. And I'm like, how would that be covered here? I mean, after you listen to a report like that.
A local business entrepreneur has a interesting suggestion how to clean up Cali.
Too tough, but this boss of a global drug cartel says it's exactly what Cali needs. That's right, Karen.
And, of course, some local law enforcement officials question whether this is the best approach, but, of course, they would. Weigh in on our Facebook page.
Should homeless teenagers in Cali be killed? Or is it excessive? Or should they be bussed to the mountains?
Is that too
have
extreme?
I wonder how they would cover the story of a homeless guy seeing this happen to his items and approaching the guy and the guy taking a sledgehammer to his head because he was scared for his life.
A vicious homeless man approached someone who was simply doing his best to clean up the area by destroying all his property. Just unbelievable. Meanwhile, if that's not horrible enough, apparently in Iowa, WHO TV is reporting that students at an Iowa high school posted a video online mocking a kid, a 13-year-old kid, Levi Null, who apparently has Asperger's syndrome. And they were mocking him for his involuntary movements. People tell me to run into things, and I don't really like it, said Null, who also has ADHD. And I tell them that I don't want to, and they just laugh at me whenever I do it. So this is bad enough, obviously. You've got a bullying problem. This is obviously not isolated to Iowa. Apparently, though, the response to this was an outpouring of support for the bulliers. Levi Weatherly, a parent of one of the accused teens, says his child was not wholly in the wrong. 3/4 of this stuff he brings on himself. And probably 1/4 of it is bullying that shouldn't be going on. 3/4 of the bullying is worth it. 1/4 is not. This kid has done things to get people mad that I think he could probably control. What is wrong with people?
And these are adults.
These are
adults. Child.
It's just stunning. I just don't know what's wrong with human beings. And to fill off our parade of humans who are demented streak that we got going here. Here is North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory on North Carolina's draconian laws that have been set up, as admitted by that guy who famously was fired after his admission on The Daily Show. Set up to disenfranchise literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of African-American voters who vote statistically more often in early voting because they have concerns of a history of their state trying to disenfranchise them, who are less likely to have IDs. We know the Justice Department is suing them. We know that it's all bets are off because the Supreme Court has gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So Chuck Todd says to Governor Pat McCrory, you know, are you sure it's not really about politics that you guys have shortened the early voting? And here is what Pat McCrory says. They have now basically removed early voting. Now, I want to tell you what early voting means, okay? Early voting means you get to vote before the election. You're wondering why I'm being so rudimentary here. Early voting means you get to vote before the election. If early voting starts a week before, you have a week's worth of early voting. If it starts 2 weeks before, you have doubled the length of early voting. But that's not the way that Pat McCrory sees it.
Voter ID, sure. You can make the voter ID argument. Well, then why also try to curtail early voting? It's hard not to look at it and say, well, geez, Republicans are getting whipped in early voting, and that's why they don't want early voting.
Well, we did. First of all, we didn't shorten early voting. We compacted the calendar, but we're going to have the same hours in which polls are open in early voting, and we're going to have more polls available. So we're actually, it's going to be almost identical. It's just the schedule has changed.
Yeah. So in other words, what Pratt McCrory is trying to pass off here is that, well, it used to be we had early voting at convenient times for everybody, and we would start it weeks before the election. Now what we're going to do is start it days before the election, but we're going to have extended hours. So you get more bites at the apple. It's just that we've made the apple tiny, tiny, tiny.
What senior citizen wouldn't like to organize a ride for themselves so they could vote at midnight?
That's right.
That's exactly what he's saying. Yes. That's what they mean.
Unbelievable. These guys, just unbelievable. All right, let's go to the IMs. I am the boxer horse. Sam, you should have Chris Savage of Electablog on to talk about Michigan court consolidation, EEA managers, etc. Would you put that, Chris Savage? Rand Paul to kick off GOP's new African-American engagement office in Detroit. I heard that. Charlie, I am. This is my first message to you since becoming a member. Given that sweet show far, you got it. Refill bus reform. I recall your show from the day after the election. You said the GOP is now a regional party and won't win a national election for many years. Isn't this the best thing that Dems could do if you were right? Isn't the ability to obstruct the last bastion of minority party in our system? This is the ability to obstruct the last bastion of a minority party. Yes, I think ultimately this is a good from a partisan perspective. But I think even better than that, it's good from a Democratic big D perspective. Matt Maher, 83, Obama should now match the rhetoric from the right wing and nominate flat-out communists for judgeships. Yes, I agree. Also, JFK was killed by the mob as per Tom Hartman and Lamar Waldron. Yes, that is my understanding of Hartman's perspective. Geeky Dork, what do you think about Russ Baker's book, Family of Secrets? In journalism school, it was drilled in my head that there was no such thing as a conspiracy theory, since the legal definition of conspiracy is the agreement between two or more persons. By the way, have you watched the movie Boy? I haven't watched Boy, and it's been ages since I read Family of Secrets. I don't remember much about it. I know it was the Bush family. But Cheney and Bushes. Since I'm one of your most mediocre callers, I was wondering if you could give me the number of the special Cliff Schechter hotline. He always sounds like he hears you fine with no delay. I love Jimmy Dore, and his buddy's Rick Perry impersonations is amazing. Jimmy is killing it. Ben, I am. We're going to work on the radio, on the phone thing. I'm not sure why it's a problem. But anyone that takes the Warren Commission report as fact or believes that Oswald acted alone needs to read the report on Operation Northwoods. I'm not prone to flights of fancy or the majority of conspiracy theories surrounding Kennedy assassination, but after reading the Operation Northwoods memos, I find a lot more plausible that higher-ups in the intelligence community had some hand in the assassination or at very least complicit. If you don't know what Operation Northwoods is, it's certainly worth reading about. It is basically, I think it was a false flag operation, if I remember correctly. Sammy Camera 1. Yes, Credo Mobile now supports iPhones. This sort of cut into our promotion. Apparently, that came up late. So I imagine sometime in the future we will run another promotion with them, but they are still sponsoring the show, but not to the same degree because we've sort of rolled back our promotional plans with them. They should have reinstituted talking filibusters. No need to create methods and criteria for ending a filibuster if the Senate has to pee. Wait, it's wrong to go around using a shopping cart as if it's your own, but proper to destroy a shopping cart as if it's your own? Yeah, indeed. Little Gray, Sam, how dare Majority Report not be open for business over Thanksgiving? Are you trying to give Holy Free Market a bad name? File upon your apostasy. 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 Sam, of the shopping carts being destroyed by that sociopath, who is, by the way, a Democrat, I mentioned that, yes. How many of them have belonged to homeless veterans? Support the troops? I agree with you. I don't care what the party is. The guy's a sociopath. Scott Skate, this must be Conspiracy Theory Friday. First, you and Cliff just ask questions into advocating for the ludicrous JFK conspiracy, and then you have noted rabid truther Jimmy Dore on, reclaiming history by Vincent Bugliosi is pretty conclusively showed that neither Leah Harvey Oswald or the Jack the Ruby conspiracies are true. There's no evidence for it. Please be skeptical, Sam. I am being skeptical, and I didn't promote any type of theory. First off, I just told you that John Kerry, the Secretary of Defense, of State, rather, says that he doesn't believe that Oswald acted alone. Now, with all due respect for Bugliosi, all right, we know that the congressional hearings in 75, who had a lot more distance and a lot more information than the Warren Commission could possibly have had, found something different. I mean, so I am simply being skeptical of the notion that the Warren Commission told us the true story. And I didn't know about Jimmy. I don't know. I don't even know if that's true, that he's a rabid truther. But let's go to 954. Welcome to the program. You're calling from a 954 area code. Who's this?
Bye-bye. Hey, Sammy.
Mike.
Michael.
From Florida. How are you?
Good, pal. Listen, you're always breaking up. It's kind of choppy to hear you. Is it something on my line or your line?
I'm not sure. I got to talk to Kyle about this, but you sound fine to me.
I got 6 out of every 10 words. If it sounds weird and I can't really understand you, understand that that's what's going on. As usual, the best hour of the week was you and Cliff, or actually the best half hour. You guys should really think about doing it as a separate podcast. I know that would be kind of a heresy, considering that you'd be competing against yourself in a way, but it's too good. Especially some weeks are better than others. This was especially good. He made 2 points on senators down here. Remember, we have our own kind of hybrid as far as Rubio running for re-election. He came off as a Tea Party guy, but he never really was a Tea Party guy in the sense of being, you know, someone in the guise of the classic Tea Party establishment. He was more anti-Castro, classic, anti-democratic, pro-Republican Cuban that's come out of the Dade County political machine for the last 25 years. He ascended to the position in the state Senate by virtually being a one- or two-dimensional candidate, and then he kind of fell into the fact that Florida's Democratic Party is an absolute disaster and it's a train wreck. Witness the election of Governor Skeletor 2 years ago, or whatever, 3 years ago. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to have a hard time unless the Democratic Party can put up a credible candidate against him.
Right.
So that's going to be some heavy lifting. I'm not saying that your positions regarding, the filibuster weren't correct, and they aren't, but it's kind of arcane for us down here. Next year is going to go a long way towards determining Rubio's credibility and also viability, because if Charlie beats Skeletor next year, he's winning by 10 points now. It's like 44-34, and there's a lot of back and forth. But they're already starting the ads down here. I don't know if you guys know that.
No.
They're already starting anti-Charlie Crist ads paid for by, the shadow groups and the 501(c)(3)s and those guys. They're already on the way. They've already decided and they haven't even started on the personal stuff yet, which is going to be really interesting.
Right.
Of course, when you're Rick, see, the thing is, Scott's inoculated in a way because, unfortunately, he went through this gubernatorial election. And when you talk to Pap, he'll be able to fill you in on it even more so, because Pap knows about what happened in Texas and all the nonsense that went on and why he wasn't prosecuted, our governor, that is. But since Scott's already been through an election, you try to bring up the fact that he dodged, you know, $1.7 billion in Medicare fraud charges.
Right, it's old news.
They're going to say, what's the point? It's old news.
Right.
Even though it was never fully vetted because Alex Sink couldn't run away out of a paper bag when she ran for governor 3 years ago. So it's going to be very hard to try to reignite that issue. Charlie's very popular. He should be able to get a lot of the business community and the legal community behind him. And the most important thing is you're going to have to show economically that while we're doing better, and we are down here, construction starts are much better, permits have been issued. For us, for everybody who doesn't know around the country, we live on construction down here and tourism. It's the two things. And to a lesser degree, agriculture. People don't think about that with Florida, but actually we do. And two out of those three are really coming back. Agriculture is still suffering a little bit, but the fact of the matter is it's going to be a hell of a dogfight. So it's going to be a 52-48, 53-47 maybe. That's a stretch, but it'll depend on turnout and it'll depend on money. Scott is going to dump a crap load of money into this race.
Right.
He already is.
Yeah.
He already is. So it's going to be interesting. The other thing, I love the assassination stuff. Have you ever been to Dealey Plaza?
I have not.
Okay, I know it's not a family trip that would be interesting, but you should try to do that. I went down there years ago before they actually opened up the 6th Floor Museum, and those people hated the idea of you asking them where even the place was. Honest to God, they would just sit there and point like Doberman pincers about where it was. They wouldn't even acknowledge you verbally. Now, to their credit, they've come a long way since then, you know, and obviously the establishment of the museum has gone a long way towards helping that. But, you know, I'll leave you with this because I know you're short on time. As a lawyer, we're trained to look for evidence. And as a journalist, which I did for 12 years before I went back to law school, you look for the story. That's just the way it is. Now, you know, you come from a family of lawyers, and you're also a journalist, more a commentator, but you still understand the difference.
Right.
The more I go along, the harder it is. As much as I like Cliff and as much as I appreciate the idea of a conspiracy, there's just no evidence to suggest it. There's no physical evidence to suggest that anything else besides one guy shooting three shots, you know, was incredibly fortunate to reach his goal that day.
I'm not sure that I buy. I mean, I'm completely agnostic as to the idea of there being multiple killers or the grassy knoll or the magic bullet theory.
There's no evidence. There's no physical evidence.
Like I say, I'm not. I'm completely agnostic to that. The motivation of Oswald is what I am talking about. Whether or not there was a greater conspiracy to get him in that situation is what I'm talking about.
Let me put it this way. 50 years ago, if someone paid him money, let's just say for the sake of argument, and by the way, a lefty killing the president back then in Dallas was about as likely as it happening today. You know, liberals in Texas back then were about as rare as they are today. I mean, let's just face it.
Right.
I remember seeing a piece with Norman Mailer about 5 years ago. He said, you know, tell me anything, but don't tell me a liberal lefty was one responsible for killing a Democratic president. That's lunacy. But here's the thing. There's been no paper trail evidence to suggest that Oswald was paid anything. There's not a checking account. There's not a bank account. The guy was broker than
Well, I'm not
Cooter
sure
Jones.
That money is the situation in this situation like this. I mean, we know this guy.
He was goaded into it?
Yeah,
it's possible. I suppose it's possible, and the obvious beneficiaries would be pretty obvious. But I mean, again, there's no evidence. Where is it? Look, there's an old story in journalism. If you have a secret between three people, two of them aren't going to keep it. I mean, it's just not going to happen. The problem is you've got to be able to show that there's somebody around somewhere, a girlfriend, you know, an aunt, a relative, an old friend. Somebody's got to know something about some relationship to give it some plausibility. Otherwise, we're just playing parlor games.
Well, we know that. We know the circles that he ran in. We know that.
True.
You know, he was back and forth from Russia. We know that he was, you know, had a CIA.
He went to the Mexican embassy, and everybody knows that. That's true.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean, those are. In a courtroom, let's just put it this way. If he had lived, if Ruby hadn't shot him, and that's another story altogether, but let's assume that it was a trial. Do you think his trips to Moscow, do you think his trips to the Cuban embassy, do you think all that stuff would have been put into evidence at that point in time?
Oh, yeah. I think
to show motive.
Huh?
To show motive.
to show motive, but I think they would have been more thoroughly investigated, right? I mean, once the guy's dead...
Right, but they also would have been excluded.
Well, it's possible. Once the guy's dead, the, you know, tracking down these things becomes a lot less urgent, doesn't it?
True.
Except for by the committees that had access to the information 25 years later or 15 years later.
Well, first of all, yeah, they would have made the argument. But, I mean, I just want people to think about this. If there had been a trial, I argue the most powerful piece of evidence to show that he had motive, means, and opportunity would have been the Walker shooting. And if anybody doesn't know about that, they need to go back and review what happened with General Walker back in April of 63. When Oswald came home and told his wife he actually took a shot at the general, but he missed it because the general sneezed and moved his head at the last second. All right. That actually, now, under the rules of evidence, you never would have gotten that in because prior bad acts are generally excluded, except for the fact that if a person says, no, no, I never did anything like that, assuming they ever take his testimony, then you can show that it can
well, let me ask you this. Okay.
That would have been...
Yeah, Michael,
that
here's what my presumption is. Here's my presumption, okay? My presumption is this, is that we don't know. All right? All we know is we have the Warren Commission that says Oswald acted alone, he was just crazy, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, we have this congressional committee that says, no, we don't buy that. And we have a guy like John Kerry who says, I don't think he acted alone. Now, this is what
who
I
said
believe.
That? I'm sorry?
John Kerry.
No, I you broke up. Who said that last part?
John Kerry.
Oh, the senator. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Secretary of State now. And my feeling is this, is that we just don't know. And but when a guy like John Kerry shares that belief, I'm not convinced that this isn't sort of like through the corridors of power, there isn't just some sense of like, you know, come on, we know what happened on some level. I don't know what that is, but I think there is.
You know what? The biggest disservice the Warren Commission did to the country and to everybody else, and maybe Lyndon had a reason for doing this because he was freaked out about either the Russian connection or the Soviet connection,
right,
and he just wanted to quell the theory that, or quell the fears among the populace that it was a coup d'etat. I don't know. But the biggest disservice that commission did at that point in time was by running out there, not being provided all the documents, not having to get a final conclusion. I hate to use Mark Lane's line about rushing the judgment, but in this case, it happens to be true.
Yep.
Lyndon was looking at he wanted the 64 election underway. He wanted it to be a referendum on him and not on JFK's presidency.
Yep.
He wanted people to know that the answers were in place. So by doing that, he did himself a disservice by forcing the issue, and now he created more questions.
Yep.
And the ones you raise are very valid. My only point is this. Buddy, there's got to be evidence.
I'm not making an assertion.
No evidence.
I'm not making an assertion.
Now, I know. You're an agnostic. You've already stated that. But my point is, I felt as much like you do. If not, I felt more like Cliff did. But after a while, you beat your head against the wall, and you go, where is this going?
Right.
It just doesn't exist. It's almost impossible, and they've been saying this the last couple of weeks, but it's almost inconceivable to think of a 24-year-old nobody, a nothing, a zero, a less than zero, could take a cheap $12.98 Italian rifle and fire three shots from 178 feet or 187 feet, whatever it was, and do what he did. But maybe that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And until somebody shows me differently, I can't explain it. You know, I heard about the puffs of smoke. I've been to Dealey Plaza. I talked to those people who investigated. I even interviewed Josiah Thompson a long time ago, who wrote 6 Seconds in Dallas, a very good book on the assassination. I was right with those guys, but after a while, you look at it, you go, it ain't there. It's almost not quite like the 9/11 conspiracies, but it's almost on that level. Because it's so frustrating to explain to somebody that the simplest answer is sometimes the only obvious.
No, I agree with
that.
I mean, like I say, when it comes to the actual sort of, you know, single theory, shooter theory, I'm just more interested in how he ended up deciding that's what he was going to do. I got to jump, though.
You don't believe that Ruth Payne accidentally got him a job at this binding company, and he was sitting there, and he read about it a month earlier. You don't buy any of that stuff. Too coincidental, right?
I don't know. Seems weird. All right.
You know, it's funny. I know you got to go, but listen, when are you coming to Florida to collect your bet?
you know, it's The question is, when do I get to go out of the house and have a drink with somebody at a bar? All right, I'll talk to you later.
Have a great weekend. Bye. Take care.
Jeremo, best line I've heard in years. Sam, when do we get to go on air? When do we go on air? I like this guy. Sorry, Michael in Florida. Can't help myself. You said, Sam, you're a journalist, and you're handsome, too. B&M, I am. A lot of laughing out loud for today's fun side. Real good job, guys. Black Havar, you must have Jimmy Dore on again. He's very funny. Most plausible reason for a cover-up of foreign involvement in the assassination is Gaviro Principe. The assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand led directly to World War One and Two. Bush in chains. More bad news for the dollar fiat. Ohio Sheriff to Mark Maron, please make sure you're buying heroin, not crowed at all. Handcuff North Carolina teen ends up shot dead in the backseat of a cop car. Sam Cedar goes on a shopping spree. Someone just bought $148 million worth of Bitcoin. Damn it. They said that my information would be private. H.R. Carl Sagan, H.R. 992 of the Swaps Regulatory Improvement Act was written by Wall Street and passed the House in late October. It deregulates derivatives. Gary Peters is running for Senator Carl Levin's seat here in Michigan and voted for this. I don't know what to do because I can't stomach the thought of him voting for him now. Have you heard of this bill? Yes. Will it be brought up in the Senate? I don't think it's going to be brought up in the Senate. I think the president has already said he would veto it. I sent you an email about the Educational Achievement Authority here in Michigan, FYI. Spay F. I've been getting strange looks after laughing out loud, waiting for my oil change at the car dealership. Michael says that after all this time, someone would have talked. There have been people who have talked, and they have turned up dead. Criso. Can't tell you how I was looking for this cedar door combo, and while I don't get sodomized or nearly sodomized regularly enough, I really hope you and Jimmy sodomize our ears regularly. You seriously make a great combo. This podcast is must listen to. And P.S., this weekend's emails to go sodomize themselves. A Square, Sam, another great interview with Bobby Kennedy. I read his piece prior to listening. Should be added to our history record of this time as it fills in the blanks between Bay of Pigs, October Crisis, and Vietnam start to show clearly where JFK was going in the dominance and madness of the security apparatus. Would recommend the 1970s Missiles of October with Martin Sheen. Low production value, but good drama. Believe it or not, was my U.S. history class assignment when in high school. Huh. Pleading for progress. Just imagined opening scene of Space Odyssey 2001, planning from the great apes, tool, weapon scene, instead going towards the future of a video showing that sociopath breaking shopping carts. That's real primal thinking. Wasm part. Unless Brower is also hauling away smashed carts, he's turning carts into litter and should be heavily fined. Kevin, 11-7-21, I love the go-to person of Rep. Tom Brown. Mental Health of America Hawaii Director Myra Grabb says Brower's likely ended his cart destruction after a flurry of local and national criticism. The shopping cart's always empty because otherwise the guy is messing with the homeless people's property and doesn't respect private property himself. Nuclear seasons. Are TV newscasters born with no conscience, or is it just atrophy within a few months of getting the jobs? Weigh in on Twitter.
It should be noted that in one of the videos of him smashing the shopping cart, he was kind enough to take out a jacket that was in the shopping cart and throw it on the floor.
Moshi Moshi. Phil Henry did a bit the other night where he was interviewing a private school principal that allowed the teachers to take some of the little fat rich kids' lunch for themselves since they can't afford food. Atom bomb. Wow, majority rule in the Senate. I sure didn't see that coming. Do you think this was simply a change of a few swing votes, or do you think there was some other dynamic? I think it was the swing votes. And I think it was like they purposely went into June with like, we are going to, this is the final test. Will they obstruct these nominees to this court?
I think that was the pre-agreement with the swing votes that yep. Reid had. I yep. mean, Reid is yep. very good about
meticulous.
This sort of thing. Yeah.
I've heard a significant minority of adults express the opinion that autism, et cetera, are excuses for the behavior of kids these days. Oy. Seems less sinister when applied to ADHD, depression, but many just think the flourishing of these diagnoses is weak parenting. Triangle Bill. Don't get me started about McCrory. He's a total douchebag. Can I get a directed McCrory?
You are a douchebag.
The latest outrage is appointed a crony to a political hack to a top position overseeing public school system, counseling, bullying, that sort of thing. The guy is an outspoken homophobe, anti-LGBT type. AFP and Crossroads already running TV ads in North Carolina as well. Muggity T. Jones, Dark Legacy is on Netflix. It's about how George H.W. Bush had Kennedy killed. I don't buy that. John Kerry is Secretary of Defense. Come on, silly. It's Joe Lieberman, says Jay Tingle. The biggest business in Florida is construction. Oh, well, at least they'll have a boom when it comes time to rebuild all the major cities 50 miles inland. The only time I heard Oswald's voice was him claiming he was a patsy. There you go. David Hill. Sam, didn't you win the podcast award yet? No, we don't know until January. Heard Jim Lehrer on Chris last night, says Greta Dog, and he hinted there was no way the Warren Commission could track this back to Russia as the military would have begun World War III. Given what we did with Iraq and the power of the military post-World War II, hard not to see where they would have not want to suggest any link, even if true. To quote Rumsfeld, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Hal Rager, Oswald seems like Beckett. Oh, we will rid me of this troublesome priest president. What? We never suggested that. Oops. Who will rid me? Okay, I got confused. Don, 88. Sam, the last 30 seconds of Killing Them Softly was awesome. Really summed up where we are in America today. C. McDonald. In case folks don't know, Jimmy Dore's usual show usually drops Saturday mornings. The answering machine messages from Drunk Bill O'Reilly, Luke Ressert by Mike McRae are hilarious. And the final I Am of the Week. From Shank Steel, I want to be the last I Am of the Week. If not, I will come smash your shopping carts. All your carts belong to us. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my shifting in and out of key, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lines got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Shine, pilot light, shining bright.